You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
In Dixie's land, where I was born in early on one frosty morning. Look away, look away, look away, Dixie land. Then I wish I was in Dixie, hooray, hooray. In Dixie's land, I'll take my stand and live and die in Dixie. Away, 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 down south in Dixie.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast. April 20th, it is the eve of Easter as we continue our Confederate History Month series with Mr. Kirk Lyons. He is the co-founder and serves as the chief trial counsel for the Southern Legal Resource Center, a nonprofit public law corporation which offers legal support to defend First Amendment violations, violations of civil rights, and discrimination against advocates of Southern heritage. And that last one probably makes him the busiest man in the business. Kirk, how are you tonight?
Doing pretty good, Brother James. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Easter. Happy Easter weekend.
Yes, and it's not every day that San Jacinto Day falls on Easter Sunday.
Very good. Very good. Hey, where else are you going to...
reason to celebrate.
Where else are you going to hear about that except here, ladies and gentlemen? Well, Kirk, of course, before we bring you on, well, you're already here, but before we transition into what we brought you on for, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your work and your history, and we'll go from there.
I've been a kind of a born-again Southerner. My father was a career Air Force officer. Both my parents were from Texas, but I ended up being born on a Air Force base in California, at McClellan Air Force Base. And my parents, when I was young, used to tease me and call me a prune picker. And I took that very personally, and I came up with a saying, just because you're born in the garage, that does not necessarily make you a car. both of my parents' families from Texas, and my dad grew up in a little town of Childress, Texas, which is where the Panhandle meets the Red River. And his dad was, parents were pioneer stock from Abilene, Texas. So anyway, I when my dad retired from the Air Force, we moved back to Texas, and I got to enjoy the pleasures of a newly integrated school in Austin, Texas, and graduated in 1974, went to the University of Texas, got a degree in history, then went to the University of Houston, and became a lawyer, which I call the world's second oldest profession, and the only profession that Christ specifically condemned when he was on earth. I've been in the public law field for quite a while. We formed the Southern Legal Resource Center in 1995, and most of our bread and butter work in our early days was student free speech cases involving Confederate flags at schools. And we would do the, local UDC chapter not allowed to fly a Confederate flag at some local park, or cases like that. We represented a gal that was not allowed to wear a Confederate flag-themed dress to her prom. Some of these cases, a lot of them back in the old days, we were able to resolve with a phone call. Some we had to sue. Some we lost. Some we won. But it seems like now that, all our warnings back in those days, look, if you let them take the Confederate flag away from these kids, the U.S. flag is going to be next, the Christian cross is going to be next. And sadly, all of that has become true, and it's even gotten worse There needs to be about a dozen organizations like the Southern Eagle Resource Center out there right now, and that probably wouldn't be enough to counter all the nonsense and hate and just downright tomfoolery that's going on against traditional America, or what I call normal America. And it's now not just, obviously, as we've said for many years, it's not just the Confederate flag. We're just the low-hanging fruit. Once they get our flag out of there, they're coming after your stuff, whatever you happen to like. And that has become so true. And so we feel like we're more relevant now than we ever were. And we're trying to pitch our message to that great big morass of middle/normal America, and try to awake them and slap them in out of their torpor before it's too late, before it's literally too late. And I have come to see that, you know, the monuments are first, we're next. And frankly, I don't really have any relish of being face down in a ditch with my hands tied behind me and a small caliber gun put at the back of my head. But I can see, you know, the agenda that's being moved here, and I'm very afraid for our country, and so I guess it makes me fight harder. And
well, you're certainly right about your concerns are well founded, and we've seen this in with other examples throughout history. They come for your flags, they come for your monuments, and then they come for your flesh.
And Americans need to get over this nonsense that, oh, it can't happen here. Oh, yes, it can, and it is. And you know, it's amazing, you know, that our supposed free speech bastions, like so-called centers of higher learning, are nothing more than totalitarian enclaves. And, you know, that's the last place that free speech is safe. And that has been moving steadily along. I mean, I went to the University of Texas in the 1970s, and it was a liberal bedrock then. But you had a lot of what I call honest liberals that still survived, and they're all gone now, pretty much, that believe that, you know, they might have their liberal views, but they believe that, you know, free speech was something worth having and worth protecting because it protected their brand of speech. You know, so if you let everybody speak, it's just like the ACLU. You know, you defend the speech that you hate so that your speech will be safe. And nobody on the left seems to think that anymore. Nobody. And
Kirk, this is Keith Alexander. Are you there? Can you hear me?
How are you?
I'm doing great, my friend. What you said really resonates with me. I went to Ole Miss Law School, and Ole Miss, there are a large number of people there that think that if they can concede on Confederate statues and things like this, somehow, miraculously, the left is going to forget about the name Ole Miss and the nickname Rebels. And
right.
I told him, it's just like I told James regarding the apostasy of liberalism taking over church denominations. James was very proud, several years ago, that hadn't happened to the Southern Baptist denomination. I said, what made you think that the devil would forget about your church? Well, the devil's did not forget about his church. They're confronting everything that we Episcopalians, at least I as an Episcopalian, were confronting back in the 60s. And likewise, people that have their favorite Confederate or American or white icons that they think will be preserved are living in a fool's paradise.
Well, let's take a pause right there. We'll come back with Kirk Lyons, and we'll continue this conversation as we, I guess, sort of have a synthesis because of the timing of the weekend and all of these matters and matters of faith. And we'll put them all together and see how it comes out in the blender when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Regrets? Oh, we're all gonna have them. Doesn't matter who you are, what you do, at some point you're gonna wish you'd done something differently. You know, the woulda, coulda, shouldas. But let me tell you a couple of things you'll never regret. You'll never regret spending extra time talking to your teenager. Trust me. You'll never regret answering your 3-year-old's question about where the water in the bathtub comes from. And I've never seen anyone wish they hadn't sat in the kitchen laughing with their children and telling them goofy stories about when they were kids. Yeah, sure, we're all gonna have regrets, but talking too much with our kids won't be one of them.
No matter what you talk about, love is what they'll hear. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at mormon.org.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only seven countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
This is Mary Wilder-Weaver, William Wilson, Gay Deceiver. Look away, look away, look away, makes it up. And when he put his arms around her, smiled as fierce as a 40-pound. Look away, look away, look away, makes it up.
I don't know how many people of you know this, but there actually is more than one verse to Dixie. In fact, it's about four or five, not nearly as well known as the traditional Southern anthem, as we all know and love it to be. But we're going to play them all tonight. I don't think we've ever done that even after all these years. Have we played the entire version of Dixie? We played the war version, the alternate version, but we've never played all of the various versions of the traditional song.
You remember, James, when I did all the various verses of the Ballad of Davy Crockett?
Would you like to do it again?
No, I can't recall all those, but it's on the internet somewhere on YouTube.
If you go to Davis Christian Youth Camp, our kids learn all the verses of Dixie and can sing it.
Well, hey, God bless you.
Well, add to that the Ballad of Davy Crockett.
In there, by the way, I really like that version. I like it played briskly. I do not like it slow.
Oh, yes. No, it is an upbeat song, and it is a song that stirs the spirit. And it should be played with an up-tempo. It shouldn't be a ballad. I agree 100%.
The Dixie should always be played triumphantly.
Triumphantly, that's the word. Hey, good. Kirk on fire tonight. Well, I want to continue on with a couple of things. Again, we're sort of merging this annual series, a victorious rendition. that's good. Merging our series here, our annual series that we run in April with Easter, which we're doing in the third hour. So let's sort of do that right now. Keith, of course, was talking a moment ago about having gone to Ole Miss. Very interesting with the case of Ole Miss, of course, is that as much as they would like to run and distance themselves from their university forebears, that entire university, the University of Mississippi, shut down during the war because every man there went to fight. Every one of them
died, too.
They were the Mississippi Grays, I believe.
Yeah, in Gettysburg, they were decimated.
So that's
the 11th Mississippi.
That was the University Greys. That's right. Yeah, that's what they were called. Now, that is a legacy worth being proud of, not this hodgepodge they've got now. But, you know, a gentleman, Joe, in Boynton Beach, Florida, sent me something, and he's a great supporter of the program. And we're actually going to start running some ads on the show from the Palm Beach Christian Group. We're working on getting those produced right now. But he sent to me the preamble of the Constitution of the Confederate States of America, which reads, "We, the people of the Confederate States, each state acting in its sovereign and independent character in order to form a permanent federal government, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invoking the favor and guidance of Almighty God, do ordain and establish the Constitution for the Confederate States of America." As far as I understand it to be true, Kirk, the Confederates, the Confederate government, the Southerners of that time always, which is the reason, of course, the great motto of the Confederate States of America is Deo Vindus, with God our vindicator. They wanted to be known as a Christian people.
I believe that's true. And you had some people that have tried to poo-poo that. For instance, they say that William Porcher Miles deliberately used the St. Andrew's cross as opposed to the St. George's cross because he did not want it to come across as an overtly Christian symbol. Well, I don't, you know, I don't think very much of that thinking. I think that William Porcher Miles picked the most perfect Christian symbol that he could have for our flag, which was the cross of St. Andrew, who was the patron saint of Scotland. And it's a heraldic symbol. The St. Andrew's cross is heraldically called a psaltier. And if you look up in heraldry, a psaltier is by definition the cross of St. Andrew, which is a Christian symbol. You know, St. Andrew was the first called. He was the first disciple of Christ. And so I don't think he could have picked a more perfect Christian symbol for us.
Well, let me just say this too, Kirk, if I could.
That secular argument that he didn't want us to have a Christian symbol, I think he did, and he picked the right symbol for us. He picked the most
well. Not only that,
for a second,
excuse me,
for a country.
I was going to say that he also picked. I think that the Confederate flag is very arguably the most beautiful flag that I've ever seen, and I'm not saying that out of bias. I'm just saying that aesthetically, it is as aesthetically pleasing as any flag I've ever seen.
Well, and
aesthetically pleasing,
Kirk's point,
it's powerful. It's a powerful symbol, and that's why they try to get rid of it and try to mute it and use other symbols, because it is such a powerful, visceral symbol.
Well, and to your point, it is a Christian symbol, too. It is a Christian flag, in fact. Not everybody was crucified on the T.
You can't say that about the U.S. flag, can you?
You certainly can't say it about the U.S. flag, but not everybody was, of course, crucified on a T-shaped cross that we associate with Jesus's crucifixion. In fact, many of the saints were crucified on X-shaped crosses, which is where, of course, the cross of St. Andrew's, the Confederate flag, gets its iconography.
But, you know, there was Confederate flags with overt Christian crosses on it. There's the Price pattern battle flag in Missouri, which has the Roman cross, which we associate with the cross that Christ was crucified on. And then you have the Polk pattern battle flag. And, of course, Leonidas Polk was an Episcopal bishop. And it is the more regular George cross and with the colors reversed. So there's just Christian symbol just pouring out of, you know, Confederate vexillology, which I think is the fancy word for the study of flags.
Well, let me ask you this, Kirk. That was a little sidebar that I hadn't intended to get into, but again, we're trying to merge these elements that make our show what it is, and on this weekend and on this month in particular, they all seem to be converging this evening. Let's just reset very quickly. We have about a minute or two left in this segment. We still got you for another 30 minutes, but explain to the audience in your own words why we do this, and I'm talking about in general, why we do the work that we do here, why you do the work that you do with the Southern Legal Resource Center, and in fact, as Christians who honor our ancestors and our fathers and our mothers, why should we? Why do we do it? Why should we do it?
Because we struggle for God-ordained liberty, and it is the only game in town. If we stop fighting, we actually have the chance to vindicate the cause for which our ancestors fought in our day and age. We don't have to coast. We can actually weigh in and fight for our God and for our Christian liberty and for our ancestors and all the things that made the South glorious and made our country glorious. And it's the only fight in town. You know, we were actually struggling for liberty for us and for our posterity. And if we stop doing that, we can actually see the consequences of what's going to happen. We can see it staring us in the face, and it ain't pretty. It is not pretty. So, I mean, that's why we do this. We do this out of love for our people and for our family and for our God and for His kingdom. And so, you know, we're the love movement. You know, the hate's on the other side, and you don't have to go very far to see it just pushed into your face.
Okay, Kirk, let me just say this, too. Don't minimize your role as an attorney in this. You said in the beginning that the profession of lawyer was the one profession that was condemned by Christ in the Bible. Also remember this. I'm in the Reformed Episcopal Church, and in the Book of Common Prayer, Jesus is referred to as our only mediator and advocate, okay? So he's our lawyer before God.
I do like
to be. So there's a very godly calling.
It is. It can be. Like it's corrupted on earth like many other things in our society. But you're right.
Well, Keith just had to work that in because he's a lawyer, too. Kirk, I am thoroughly enjoying this conversation so far, my friend. I'm glad we've got you. But for two more segments, it's only half over with Kirk Lyons, and he'll be back with you right after this.
We're glad to be here.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
North Korea has criticized National Security Advisor John Bolton and said it no longer wants to deal with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Jack Keane, retired four-star general and chairman of the Institute for the Study of War, tells Fox News Kim Jong-un still wants to meet with the president.
Well, he's trying to create some division among our national security team and weaken it. At the same time, he's going way out of his way to avoid any criticism of the president, because what Kim Jong-un wants again is a summit with the president.
Keane says Kim still believes he can get sanction relief from President Trump. Clashes broke out between dozens of demonstrators and police in Paris on the 23rd Saturday of Yellow Vest protests. Dozens of black-hooded demonstrators threw rocks at police, and some set fire to motorcycles in the center of the French capital. Trash cans and several scooters were also set ablaze. Police responded by firing tear gas and stun grenades. You're listening to USA Radio News.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people with credit card debt. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, the first step is yours. Call Consolidated Credit now. Call 800-406-0046. 800-406-0046. That's 800-406-0046. Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company. Licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by the Virginia State Corporation Commission. License number DC-32.
Littleton, Colorado is remembering the Columbine High School shooting victims who died 20 years ago. The hope among Columbine victims' families and shooting survivors is for a peaceful weekend of remembrance. Public events include a silent vigil at the Memorial Monument in the park next to the high school. Current students, born years after the 1999 attack, are doing community service in memory of the 12 students and one teacher killed in what back then was the nation's deadliest school shooting. Two people have been arrested in Northern Ireland in connection with the shooting death of journalist Laura McKee.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-96-
Oh yeah, oh.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Space was sharp as a butcher's cleaver, but that did not seem to grieve. Look away, makes it act. But our Mrs. Act did the foolish part. She died for a man that broke her heart. So look away.
Victorious, you pick your adjective. That rendition of our national anthem is indeed that. And Kirk, I've got a question for you that I wanted to be the first question out of the gate this segment, but we'll shelve it for a quick question and a quick answer, because even I find it hard to articulate exactly why this is. Maybe you can help me out. So we were picking the music for tonight's show last night, getting it all queued up and to our producer in advance, as he likes it to be. And, of course, as I listen to Dixie, it always brings chills to my arms and a sense of pride, something that stirs the heart and the soul. And then as we were preparing for the third hour, which is still to come tonight, we're going to have a reflection on Easter and the biblical accounting of the resurrection of Christ. And I was queuing up some old-time Southern gospel music, and I had the exact same feeling of pride and you know, the hairs on my arm standing. And it once again, that gospel music, like Dixie, stirred the soul and uplifted me. Why is it that those two things, which the modern day church now would say you can't even be a Christian and have a Confederate flag or any reverence for these people, why is it that Dixie and gospel music can elicit the exact same reaction from a person?
Well, I think that music sings right to the soul, and we in the South have always been a musical people, and we've always been a biblical people, and we express our feelings through music. And you know, you can go to Appalachia and listen to the psaltery and Elizabethan English being sung, or you can go down to Cajun country and hear it sung in French, or you know, country folk songs from rural parts of the South, and it's just part of us. We're musical people, and you know, it's not an accident that our war between the states was a musical war. I mean, it was some of the most enduring and popular music that's ever come out of America came out during that 4-year period, and you know, and it's not an accident that the South is known as the Bible Belt either. You know, they kind of go hand in hand.
Well, there is a congruency there, and it's something that I feel in my soul as I was listening to those two types of music back to back last night in preparation. I certainly felt I've known that before, of course, but it was, you know, experienced in back to back last night. Now, I got to ask you this. I always get anxious when we present this series, because you're confined to, depending on how Saturdays fall in any given April, either 4 shows or 5 shows. Of course, there's always 4 weeks in a month, but sometimes there can be 5 of a particular day. Sometimes we can have 5 episodes in a month. Anyway, but you can't get to it all. I mean, when you're doing this series, now we do talk about Southern-related issues year-round, but we really put the focus on it during April for obvious reasons. And I used to struggle with, well, there's no way I can profile every hero or every battle. And so I just said, you know, don't worry about it. You can't do it. What you can do is make people think for themselves and present a case for what we're here to showcase during this month, and then do the best you can in the time you've got and leave people to do their own research above and beyond that. But I am asking each guest this month, Kirk, and I'll ask you now, what are some of the heroes and battles that stand out to you? Again, we can't get to them all, but when you think about Southern sacrifice and valor and gallantry, I got those backwards, what are some of the examples you would point to?
Well, I would say there are the crew of the CSS Hunley, and you could pick which crew you wanted because that boat killed three crews. And the last one, the last crew that went out there and sank the USS Housatonic, I think were probably the bravest men that ever put to sea. They were sailing in a ship, or they were in a ship that had already killed two crews. And as a matter of fact, before they were allowed, before that crew was allowed to volunteer to be the crew that would go after the Housatonic, they had to pull the Hunley off the bottom of the river and take the decomposing bodies of the previous crew out of it, you know, which must not have been a very, could not have been pleasant at all, before they would be allowed to volunteer to be the crew that would go after the Housatonic. Bravest men that ever went to sea, in my opinion. And that,
fine example to be sure.
Out. And, you know, we generally tend to forget the Navy. You know, a lot of us, you know, most of our ancestors fought in the Army. And so we didn't tend to forget the incredible story of the Confederate Navy. But I'm always, being a Texan, I worked at the Texas State Library when I was in college. And I used to go, when I worked in the archives, I would go into the archive reading room and have them bring the historic battle flags of Texas to the table. And the one that always moved me the most was the battle flag of the 1st Texas Infantry of Hood's Texas Brigade, who were holding off an entire Army Corps in Miller's Cornfield at the Battle of Sharpsburg in 1862. And 82% of that regiment of the 1st Texas became casualties. 82%. One of the highest battle casualties of a regiment during the war. And 9 color bearers were killed defending that battle flag. There, when I saw it, and it was before it was restored, you could still see the blood in the flag. You could still see it. And the only reason that the Yankee that turned that flag into the War Department got the Medal of Honor was because he turned it in. And all he did was pull the 9 men off the top of that flag and found the flag on the bottom. Had 9 dead color bearers around it and on top of it. And he picked up that flag and turned it into the War Department, and he got the Medal of Honor. Yeah. But, you know, the bravery was those 9 dead color bearers defending that flag and the 82% casualties of the 1st Texas Infantry. That's one of my highlights. And
great examples.
You know, and
go ahead.
So many heroes. I mean, how do you pick one? You know?
You can't. You can't. Well, that's the thing. That was my struggle.
Can't.
Right, go ahead, Keith.
Let me change the topic just briefly. You're a student of the Civil War. You're a student of Southern culture and subsequent American history and world history. How do you think a Confederate victory in the Civil War would have changed subsequent American and world history?
Ooh.
Boy, well, there's two ways. I think that in the long run, in the short run, it probably would have improved things. It would have restored a constitutional balance. But it's kind of like, you know, our American history is kind of like studying the history of ancient Israel and Judah. And, you know, you see how often, you know, they've been shown miracle after miracle by the Lord God, and yet they still keep going back to Baal and their other gods and sinning and rebelling against God. And one has to think that probably, you know, we might still be in a fix if the Confederacy had won. I'd like to think that it'd be better than that, that we would have charted a course that would have extended the life of our republic on into the future. But the nature of sinful man makes me think that, you know, we probably would have had our bright spot. It would have been an improvement. We would have gone on. But inevitably, the modern world would close in on us. And
let me give you my vision on that, if I could, just a minute,
okay.
Kirk.
That's a great take, though, Kirk.
No, that's a great take. I have the kind of opposite opinion. I think that it's obvious that if the South had won, the United States or the government here for the continental, what is now the continental United States, would have been half as big, half as wealthy, approximately, and we probably would have had a history more like that of Australia than America. If we could have avoided involvements in World War One and Two, we would have saved countless lives. Just think of through the Anglosphere. Because of Winston Churchill's bellicosity, every Englishman that died in the First or Second World War, every Canadian, every American, every Australian, every New Zealander, none of those people would have died if their nations, led by Great Britain, hadn't gotten involved in those two meat grinder wars. Now, just think of how much better the world would be now if all of those people had survived and passed on their genes. We would not be down at 10% of the world's population.
All right, hold on. We got to stop. We got to stop right there. We got one more segment. My goodness, it's going by quickly, but we will be right back with Kirk Lyons.
To the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get co-certified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified. Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this. The Kosher Certified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities, and it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start meaning it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and promote God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the Liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Now hails to the health of the next old missus and the gals that want to kiss us. Look away, look away, look away, Dixie. And if you want to drive away sorrow, come and hear our song tomorrow.
kicks and itching fatter makes your fat a little fatter. Look away, look away, look away, Dixie Land. Then hold way down and scratch your gravel to Dixie's land. I'm bound to travel. Look away, look away, look away, Dixie Land. Then I wish I was in Dixie. Hooray, hooray, in Dixie's land. I'll take my stand and live and die in Dixie. Away, away, away down south of Dixie. Away, away, away down south of Dixie.
Well, I don't know, folks. What do you think? Should we just keep playing music all night, or should we get back to it? It's a tough Hey, just a couple of things that you and Keith touched on, Kirk, in that last segment. And then we really got to make haste here because I want to read a letter that we got from a young man who listens in Colorado that I want you to comment on, Kirk, and then something to you as well, Keith, with regards to if the Confederacy had won. Yes, I have thought about what Kirk said. Had they won, the world would have closed in on them and on us. And perhaps, you know, the innocence that and the nobility that the Confederates have, would it had extended all the way to the common, you know, where we are at now?
Or been compromised.
You know, it's hard to imagine it would have.
John Weaver has a very interesting take on this. Pastor John Weaver says that we won the war. We won the war because who turned to Jesus Christ in their hour of sorrow and misery and destruction? The South. We found God while the North found mammon and went on with their prosperity and headed to hell. And that's, you know, John Weaver's take.
I had Pastor Weaver on last year for this particular series, and he didn't make mention of that. But that's a very interesting take. I'd like to actually talk more about that, but we're in a big rush, and I got to get to this. I want to get to this, Kirk, because we're asking everybody to do it. I don't want to say it quickly, but we do want to give you the opportunity before I read this letter that basically reinforces everything we've been talking about tonight. Your own ancestors, Kirk. You know, I know a lot of people. It's fashionable today to think that we're more enlightened and that we're better people than our ancestors. I don't think I'll ever be half the man my grandfathers were, but at least I can have the opportunity to honor them and do the best that I can. Kirk, who are your ancestors that fought for the South?
My great great grandfather Gainham S. Lyons fought in Captain John S. White's company, the Sons of 76, which became Company H 26. O'Neill's Alabama Infantry Regiment. And that was my great-great-grandfather. His son, John Henry Lyons, went to Texas and was a pioneer settler of Abilene. And his grandson was my grandfather, who fought in World War One. And I actually had a cousin that, as a small child, grew up with his widow. And so she got all the stories from her grandmother, and this cousin passed all those stories to me.
Well, very good. Now, I've got something I'm going to read to you, and I'd like to get your response. And then this is a letter. I'm going to stop, let Kirk respond, then I'm going to read the second half of the letter, which is more geared for Keith's response. But this is what it reads, and it comes from a young man in his 20s, or I guess he's in his early 30s now, and he comes from Colorado. I wrote to you for the first time. The introduction is greeting James Keith and the TPC crew. I wrote to you for the first time about a year ago after thoroughly enjoying your Confederate History Month shows. I want to touch base again. If I may, I'd like to share what the Old South and its honorable patrimony means to me personally. I'm not sure if I have any Confederate ancestors or not. The closest Southern roots I have are to Oklahoma, the land of Brigadier General Stand Waddy, the Cherokee leader, who was last to surrender his fighting Indians in service to Dixie after Appomattox. Nevertheless, I feel a spiritual kinship with the South and the civilization it represents. After receiving a conventional public school education on how horrible the South was, I was 10 years old when I first saw Gone with the Wind, a film of great beauty to be sure, but one scene struck my youthful mind hard, the field of dying, wounded, and suffering soldiers in Atlanta that Scarlet wades through. The movie humanized the South and stirred my blood. Later, I found that my Okie grandfather, childhood hero, was Robert E. Lee, so much so that he had a hand in naming his own brother after the great general. This led me to a more intensive study of Southern and Confederate history over the years until I was firmly entrenched in the Southern camp. I may not be Southerner by birth, but neither was General Patrick Claiborne, and I stand with the Irishman in declaring my love for Dixie's land. All I can say is that the Southern culture represents the best of European civilization, a synthesis of Christian, classical, and medieval heritage on this continent. Great Southern men as Lee, Jackson, and Forrest are the torchbearers. They are our Caesar, our Napoleon, our Alexander the Great, yet exemplars of Christian manhood and chivalrous honor as well. Kirk?
I would tell that young man that you are your own Confederate ancestor. No one need to be feel left out. There is enough greatness to go around, and there is so much that is being called for us to do today. We need to use these men as our inspiration. Some of us can claim it by blood. Others, like I said, by affirmation. You're welcome to join us in the fight as we fight for what is left for of our liberty and our civilization and our God. It's really that simple.
Ain't that the truth? Because we certainly know there's a lot of people who do share our blood that don't have this man's sense of duty and honor.
He is welcome to come, and he can be governor of the Confederate state of Colorado, which is by the way.
Wow. Hey, you learn something every day. Now, I want to read the end of this, and we're going to get Kirk's contact information. And, Kirk, we may have to have you back again next week.
Well,
I've enjoyed this so much. I feel as though we still have so much more to cover, but everything we've covered has certainly been not a wasted second.
Everybody in this country needs to start wearing a yellow vest, and I'm serious. I can't
hear you.
Anything that would make the tyrants that rule over us wet their pants quicker than a couple of 100,000 people wearing yellow vests in this country.
Well, I think, you know, I asked how they got all of those matching uniforms over there, and I think that they come standard in the cars as a safety feature. So we need to talk with some manufacturers
here. Just go to Tractor Supply, and you can get a yellow vest for $20 or less.
All right. All right, Keith, to you, this young man concludes by writing. I say young, he's only 7 years younger than me at 31 years old. I love the South so much so that when I got married 2 years ago, my wife and I took our honeymoon to Virginia and Tennessee with the intention of visiting Confederate landmarks. We spent the first of our trip at the Robert E. Lee Hotel in Lexington, Virginia, which I first heard about from James on TPC. Not getting nearly everything into 1 week, we came back to Virginia last year and visited much more. I was particularly awed by Monument Avenue in Richmond. The two of us plan on coming back to Tennessee this year to continue our tour. By the way, do you, Keith, have a Confederate landmark, monument, battlefield, or gravesite that shouldn't be missed? Keith, very quickly, answer, as they are coming back to the Middle Tennessee, Eastern Tennessee area later this year, this young married couple, what would you encourage them to see that is in that area? And then let's get Kirk's contact information for how people can learn more about his organization.
Three places that are near and dear to the heart of everyone that revers the memory of General Nathan Bedford Forrest. First, Parker's Crossroads Battlefield, around near a little bit past Jackson, Tennessee, where he told his troops to charge both ways and basically defeated the Union Army that was after him with an unorthodox tactic. Then Shiloh, where he first started affair with greatness by covering the retreat at Fallen Timbers. And third, probably the best battlefield plan in the Civil War, according to Robert E. Lee, Bryce's Crossroads in northern Mississippi.
All right, that might be a little out of the way if they're going no further east than Nashville, but they can work it in. I mean, Shiloh isn't
that big fun. All those places are east of Nashville. In fact, they're within 100 miles of Memphis.
Right, rather, they're not going any west of Nashville. But anyway, perhaps they can. And it's Shiloh absolutely should be seen, if nothing else. I mean, that's one of the greatest the battles.
Could have been won, and it was winnable, but for PGT Beauregard's caution, it would have changed the whole course of the war in the West.
This young man finishes by writing, "Thank you for reading, and happy Easter, gentlemen. P.S., please accept my donation of $100 this Holy Week to your worthy program. And if possible, could you play I'm a Good Old Rebel by Hoyt Axton?" Well, I can tell you, we certainly will do that next week. Now, Kirk, I am going to be calling you because I've enjoyed this so much. We may need to have a round two next week if you're available.
Okay.
But give us the information on your organization, website, any contact information.
The Center is a nonprofit, tax-deductible public law firm. We can be reached at P.O. Box 1235. Black Mountain, North Carolina, 28711. We welcome support, regular support. You can also find us online at www.slrc-csa.org. And you can also chat with us on Facebook. We've got a very lively Facebook page while we're still allowed to be there at Mark Zuckerberg's pleasure. But come join us there while we're still there.
Oh, man. Well, he couldn't have ended that out or any better. Kirk Lyons, everybody. Kirk, I really want to thank you for coming on. You have been
my
a fantastic
pleasure.
Guest this evening.
Yeah, always good to have you, Kirk. Easter.
You too. Happy
and
Easter,
happy
brother.
Easter to you and your family. And
what a wonderful family it is.
Good seeing you, hearing from you.
Good to hear you too, my friend.
Kirk Lyons, everybody. You may hear from him again sooner than you think. Thank you, Kirk, and have a blessed day tomorrow. And with that being said, we are going to shift our focus to the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is what Easter is all about. We like the bunnies. We like chocolate. I really like chocolate, but I like what Easter's all about even more.
Doesn't like you.
We'll be right back.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.